Welcome to Defining Moments, a program in which we get to know prominent people personally as they share the significant events, insights, relationships, and values of their lives. Defining Moments is brought to you on Christian Talk 660 by American Leprosy Missions, an international Christian ministry headquartered in Greenville, South Carolina. Defining Moments aims to build up the body of Christ by making its leaders better known to all of us. And now, here's your host for Defining Moments, Bob Smith.
Thank you for joining us today for Defining Moments. Today, we'll get to know Dr. Jimmy Epting, president of North Greenville University in Tigerville, South Carolina. It's just north of the city of Greenville and just south of the Smoky Mountains in western North Carolina. It's what we in South Carolina call the upstate. Jimmy, thank you very much for sharing your life with us today. We're anxious to hear about it, and we really appreciate your time.
Thank you for asking me.
Defining Moments is about your life, of course, but first, tell us a bit about North Greenville University.
Well, North Greenville University is a four-year institution, obviously. It has a graduate program with two master programs, a Master's of Business Administration and a Master's of Christian Ministry. We have over 40 undergraduate programs. But our mission statement is a commitment to quality education and a biblically sound, Christ-centered environment. And so we try very hard to provide the very best in academics and at the same time have Jesus Christ right smack dab in the center of it all.
Great. Well, it's really an impressive institution, and I'm hoping you'll tell us more about it later. Now, for the next hour, we're going to imagine that you've been given a fully paid sabbatical for as long as it takes to write your autobiography. And to help you complete it soon, you'll be alone in a beautiful, comfortable, but very remote cabin that we call Scribbler's Den. It has a great cook and a housekeeper, but no TV, no telephone, no email, no internet. Just a word processing computer with dictation software and a printer and plenty of pens and paper if you want to write that way. I'll bet you haven't had this much solitude in a long time.
That's correct.
You won't need to take much, just mainly your memories. And to help you organize them, we're gonna help you recall the defining moments of your life. Those events, insights, people, decisions, mistakes, relationships that have shaped you and changed your direction, helped you, hurt you, constrained you, attracted you, stopped you, been your best accomplishments, and have affected others. But you won't be writing all the time, so you'll want to take some books and music and maybe other recordings, and we'd like to know what those are. And last, and this one's really marvelous, you can have two visitors from the past, and we'll want to know who you'll choose and what you want to talk with them about. That sound like fun?
That is. That's going to sound like a lot of fun.
Well, we all have one defining moment in common, our birth. Tell us about yours, where, when, your parents, and so on.
Yeah, I was born in Louisville, Kentucky, to some wonderful parents, B.I. and Sarah Epting. And it was on April the 1st. I've been an April fool all my life, and I used to fight about that when people would tell me I was a fool, and then I realized I was being a fool fighting about it. But April 1st, 1951, my daddy was in a revival, and it was snowing, and he couldn't get back for my birth. A friend of my mother's called and said, told my daddy, well, congratulations, you have twin boys. And my daddy, you could almost hear, you dropped the phone, and he said, are you kidding? And she said, yes, April Fools, you have one healthy boy. And so that was, maybe it was great that it wasn't twins. Some folks say, I thank the Lord there's not two of that guy.
So your father was a pastor?
Yes, he was. He's a South Carolina Baptist minister most all his life, and also was a director of missions.
What's your earliest memory or your favorite early memory?
I can remember going to church and when I was, two or three or four years old, and I'd certainly fall asleep. It wasn't that my daddy wasn't a good preacher, but I'd fall asleep sometimes in church, and I remember waking up and looking around, and there was no one in church. And the doors were closed, and the lights were out, and I'd been left.
Uh-oh.
And it scared me to death, and I said, oh no, what am I going to do now? So I just sat there and I guess as much as a little kid could, I felt comfortable. I felt like, well, this is God's house and I'm going to be okay. And certainly nothing would happen to me here. And so I had a comfort zone that developed as security. And it wasn't long before Mom and Dad came back and got me. And I was one of those kids that usually somebody would pick me up and take me home with them. And they thought somebody in the church had grabbed me and taken me home, and it's because they didn't see me anywhere. So they felt real bad about it. They said that I said that, well, don't worry about it, Dad. I was in the Lord's hands the whole time.
Well, was there another early defining moment before you started the school?
But I remember one Christmas, never got much at Christmas, but I remember getting a new cowboy suit at Christmas, and boy, I was so proud of that. I put that cowboy suit on, and I was looking in the mirror and all, and I had everything you can imagine on a cowboy suit, the vest and the little guns and the flaps and all, and my best friend growing up basically was my dog named Blackie. So I remember walking out on the back little stoop of a back porch, and we had a fenced in backyard, and here came Blackie. He came running across that yard, and I thought he was going to love on me. Next thing I know, he was barking, and he jumped and knocked me down, and started tearing at my suit, and I started crying and hollering, and after he had ripped it up pretty good, he realized it was me. And the next thing he did, he licked me in the face, and as if, I'm sorry, I didn't realize it. But he was always very protective of me, and he didn't know who I was at that time. And I'll never forget that even your best friends, and this in this case my dog, makes mistakes, and so mm-hmm. you have to forgive and move on. And it was hard for me to get over that because that was a special mm-hmm. little cowboy suit, and that was all I got for Christmas.
Have you been a dog lover since?
Ever since. All yeah. my life. I've got two dogs now, and I love them both. I have a Boykin Spaniel that's just a big part of our family. He's about 9 or 10 years old, and then I've got a Labrador Retriever that's special as well. So I love dogs.
Great. Tell us about your primary school. What was that like? Where'd you go to school?
First, I went to, when we lived in Columbia, I went to Brooklyn Casey number 1, and then we moved to Rock Hill, South Carolina, where I attended most of my elementary school time was in Rock Hill at Silver Circle School, elementary school. Mm-hmm. And it was a special school. We had a lot of good friends, and I remember what I liked about elementary school was the opportunity to have some responsibility. I liked the safety patrol. I liked being the one that helped students walk across the streets, and stop the cars. That gave you a feeling of power, Here's a little old fella, and we had those little white straps that came across your chest, and you pin on have your little badge, or if you were a captain, it had that badge, or the major. I made it up to major finally before I finished up, and we always got to, if you earn so many points, you could go to Washington, D.C., and go and travel up there and see the Capitol. And I would go every year, earn enough points to go every year. But the safety patrol, what it really did, I look back now, and it was a defining moment because I could see that I enjoyed leadership. I enjoyed being in charge. I enjoyed having folks work with me. And even in elementary school, I felt like the Lord maybe gave me some gifts in that area because I seemed to work well with the other kids at that time.
Oh, I bet. What about books back then? What would you say was your favorite book?
I liked, thinking back, gee, that's a long time ago, but I liked the Huckleberry Finn books. I thought it was, I liked the creativity that was written into that book. I liked the different ideas, different things that happened, and I think as we mentioned earlier too, I liked his the courage of Huckleberry Finn. I liked the way he approached life. and there's never a dull moment. I enjoy life. I like to cut up, have fun, kid. And when you get too serious about life, you need to read a book like that, you
know? That's true. What about music and other performing kind of things?
Well, I never forget. Mom had me start practicing the piano and taking lessons, and I enjoyed singing. Daddy would always, we were in small churches, so it wasn't hard for me to have the opportunity to get up and sing before the church, and I can't say I did a good job at that, but Daddy always made sure I had plenty of opportunity to sing, and he would push me in front of people to sing. My sister is a lot better vocalist than I ever thought about to be in, but I enjoyed that. But Mama had me take piano lessons, and I was doing really well with piano, and I had this teacher. It just goes back, I guess, a lot of times in anything, who's teaching you. But I loved her, and I would work hard for her. And she was the minister of music's wife at another church. And then one day they left that church, and all of a sudden I didn't have a piano teacher. And so I never could find another piano teacher that I liked that could motivate me like she could. And so after a few years, I got more interested in ball than I did piano. But I never stopped trying to sing, and even now I've been known to break out in a song when I speak or preach somewhere, or we have a little what we call presence quartet here on campus, and we sing some in chapel here at North Greenville.
What part do you sing?
Oh, I sing bass. I'm not a true bass, but I can get down fairly low.
So, any other things that you particularly enjoyed back then?
Well, I enjoyed selling. Selling anything and everything. I was the kind of person that when the interest in trying to get someone to buy something from you always intrigued me. Everything I had seemed to be for sale, you know. And if I could make a little money on it, I would. And there many of my friends would come by and they'd say something about, boy, I sure like this or that, and I'd say, well, I'll sell it to you, you know. And so I'd sell ball equipment. I'd sell lemonade on side road. I'd sell just whatever hit me that day. It came very easy for me to ask someone to about buying something or giving something or doing something for others. And I enjoyed that and still do today.
Very good preparation for being a college president.
I was a good beggar back then and still a good beggar now. And anyway, those who might hear this interview, you don't forget to remind my wife that when I die, to put on my tombstone, it came to pass, the beggar died. You know, so, you got to have those kind of traits in order to be a good president for sure.
Well, Scribbler's Den, the place you're going to go, has a player for every kind of audio or video recording. They even have an 8-track player. And you can take a few recordings with you. There aren't any recordings up there. It can be music, recorded voice, or video. And if you could just take just one, what would it be?
Well, it would certainly, I would want to keep and have with me the recording of my father's funeral. At the time of this recording or this interview right now, it just happened. So my daddy died on this past Friday, and we had the funeral this past Sunday. And we're on, so this is Thursday, so it's only been about 4 days ago. So when we got hold of the pastor that Dad really wanted to do the funeral, he was somewhere else. So my sister said, well, why don't you do it, Jimmy? So I agreed to go ahead and be the main pastor for the funeral. So when we started on Sunday for the funeral and I got up, I told him, I said, this is my daddy, and I want everybody here to know that I'm not doing the funeral because I couldn't make it through. And everybody sort of, you could see them sort of look at each other, wonder what's going to happen next. And I also told them I was not a pastor, and so pastors need to do funerals. I'd speak in church everywhere, but I'm not an ordained minister. And then third, I said, I'm going to let Daddy do his own funeral. And so I turned my back to him and came back around to the audience and told them, the folks, the kind people who were there, that I said, I'm B.I. Epting, and I want to thank all of you for being here. And then I proceeded to perform, I proceeded as if I was B.I. Epting and did my own funeral as B.I. Epting, and had a video in there of him playing some harmonica and sharing Jesus Christ, and had a student come up that he had taught to play the harmonica, a North Greenville student, and talked about heaven and how beautiful it is, and used Revelations 21 and 22 and other parts of the Bible to explain how beautiful, and told them that the Bible was correct about heaven. I'd been there and done that. They need to come up, be prepared to come up when their time comes. And we had some folks accept the Lord because of it. And God just took over. And so in order to do it, I had to get away from Jimmy and become B.I. And then I had a better comfort zone as I tried to do the funeral. So we had someone recording all of it, and I'd very much want to have that with me.
I'm sure he'd be very proud of you. Yeah. Very proud of you. We're going to take a little break right now, hear from our sponsors, and when we come back, we're going to be talking about your high school and college years and how you got into your career.
Hello, I'm Chris Doyle, president of American Leprosy Mission. We are proud to sponsor this exciting new radio program, Defining Moments. For over 100 years, ALM has been working to bring healing and hope to those affected by leprosy. Leprosy is a tragic disease that robs people of their dignity, usefulness, and self-worth. But you can make a difference, a defining moment, if you will, in the life of someone with leprosy. Help us deliver the cure. Call us today at 1-800-LEPROSY or visit our website at leprosy.org. Thanks for listening and for caring.
You're listening to Defining Moments on Christian Talk 660, serving upstate South Carolina from Greenville, Spartanburg, and Anderson.
Hello, I'm Chris Doyle, president of American Leprosy Mission. I want to tell you the story of a young man from Angola that suffered from one of the most frightening diseases known to man, leprosy. Carlos came from a poor family in the city of Wambo. After completing high school, he became a school teacher and enjoyed that work for 12 years. Then suddenly he began to feel terrible pain in his legs, and nodules began to appear on his face and ears, making him look terrible. First, he spent a lot of money on traditional treatments and also in the hospitals of the Wambo area. However, the disease continued to worsen. It was then that a friend told him to go to the Kalakembe Hospital, and so he did. When the doctors saw him, they told him the devastating news. He had leprosy. He broke down and cried bitterly. But thankfully, the nurses and doctors cheered him up and told him that he needed to have faith in the great physician, the Lord Jesus Christ, because he cures us on the inside and the outside. Carlos stayed at the hospital for 5 years and was finally discharged as a cured patient. His testimony is that he was cured not only in his body, but in his soul. Even though he was baptized as a child, he was far from God. As he was following the treatment, he started to study the Bible. As a result of the Bible study, God transformed his life. He was baptized in the chapel just outside the hospital in the leprosy village. In his own words, Carlos says, "I am happy because Jesus Christ lives in me and also in my family. And I wish to express thanks to all who have, through love and sacrifice, contributed to our having this opportunity as leprosy patients to find a cure in our bodies and in our souls." Through the generous gifts of people like you, Carlos and many others can experience a defining moment in their lives. But there are many others in the world suffering from leprosy. They need your help. Leprosy strikes a new victim every 2 minutes. Please call us at 1-800-LEPROSY or go to our website at leprosy.org. Give a gift today and be a part of a defining moment in the life of a child with leprosy. Please call today, and thanks for caring.
Welcome back to Defining Moments. We're talking with Dr. Jimmy Epting, president of North Greenville University. We're just about to start talking about his middle school and high school years. And tell us a little bit about that. You were still in Rock Hill during your middle school, or what we might have called junior high or something back then?
Correct. I was at Civic Circle Elementary, ran all the way through the eighth grade, and then I went to Sullivan middle school, I guess. My ninth grade, and then we went to high school, 10th, 11th, and 12th, Rock Hill High School. And it's at the time that
there was the minority, for minorities there was a high school, and then there was the for the rest of us a high school, and so they had us separated, and then about that that time they brought all of us together. We went to school together, and it was very interesting to come together, and we handled it really well. I think the adults had more problems with it than we students, but students, we enjoyed coming together and going to school together, and 'cause we've been separated for so long, and then the federal government had required the integration to occur, and it was a neat time and to be in Rock Hill and going to school together like that.
Did you know those kids before the schools came together?
Yeah, where my father's church is located at that time, and where we lived was not far from a lot of those folk, and I played ball with many of them, many of the minority students, and we've had a good time every day playing, and so there, many of them were my friends, and some of my best friends, and I was thrilled to see. I never got to see them till after school in the afternoons or in the evenings, and we'd play on the basketball outdoor courts and football and baseball together, and so it thrilled my heart to be able to go to school with them.
Mm-hmm. Great. Yeah. What about another defining moment about that time? Something comes to your mind?
Well, yeah, growing up about that time, we didn't have a television in our home, and Mom and Dad didn't think that was the right thing to do. And so I can remember many times I would go over and see my friends and perhaps not tell Mom and Dad exactly what I was doing. Maybe that's stretching the truth a little bit in talking to them. But if a special show was coming on, I might sneak over there to see that. But also they didn't approve of me going to see movies either. And I remember there were probably a few times when I probably sneaked around and did that. But I look back on that, and that definitely was a defining moment in my life, because it encouraged me to read more and got to enjoy books more. I like reading, and so there's just so much homework and other things you can do. Television, as we know even more so now, it takes up a lot of time, and even movies are not the best in the world. You can find some good movies, but I didn't appreciate it then. Let me tell you, I always kept telling them, and they finally did. I always kid them. I said, you know, here I am. I get on in the, maybe even almost out of the house, and you've got television now and all. It's interesting how things change. But they did change, and I think we did get television before I actually graduated from high school, before I finished out of high school days. But it was important. Now looking back, I'm thankful they did it the way they did. It helped me.
Well, your love of reading hasn't gone away, and in Scribbler's Den, they have a small library there. It's got the Bible in Hebrew and Greek and in every English translation, and basic reference books like Strong's Exhaustive Concordance and with the lexicons. It's all the works of Shakespeare and Merriam-Webster's Unabridged Dictionary and the Encyclopedia Britannica, but that's about it. Now, you can take several other books, and what's the most important book that you'll want to take with you to read or reread while you're there?
I have a book. I call it my Bible story book, and this Bible story book has been special to me from about age 10, 11, or 12 on up, and I never get tired of reading it. It brings out all the special Bible stories. David and Goliath and Joseph and Samson, and I liked when we got and grabbed two columns and pulled them together and killed all those folks, you know, and it's just so many wonderful Bible stories, and it's in a narrative that's so enjoyable, but it's factual, it's very biblical, it's right on base with the Bible, but it brings in other points that you'd have to do a little research normally. That's not right in the Bible, but it sort of explains why certain things are done a certain way. And why things happened the way they did, and so I'd enjoy having that with me up there and reading and having it in the den and reading it over.
Okay.
You never get tired of reading it. Put it that way.
Okay.
You know, it's one of those books.
You've got it. Tell us a little bit about your high school days. You know, where, favorite subjects and all that sort of thing.
Well, I liked all the subjects. I really did. I guess math and science might have been a little better for me, but I now some of my professors, my teachers back then would probably say, well, it didn't show that he liked them all, but I look back and wish I had spent a little more time on my studies, but I guess back then I was interested in sports, and basketball became my main sport, and I'm glad it did, because it helped. I wouldn't have been able to go to college if I hadn't got a basketball scholarship, and mom and dad couldn't afford to send me, so I was able to get some academic scholarship help and basketball help and all that worked together to my advantage to be able to continue my education.
Did you work during your high school years?
Yes, I did. I guess another defining moment in my life was I was a paper boy in high school, and it was out of necessity more than anything else. My father, being preaching in a small church, he didn't make much, and we didn't get to do a whole lot because of he had a low salary, and my sister had gone off to college. She was at Furman University, and it was costing her quite a bit, and mom and dad were having a hard time making ends meet, and so I took on a paper route that covered the whole town of Rock Hill, South Carolina. And it was the state paper out of Columbia, and I was the only paper boy for the state in that town. And it was even then it was a pretty good area to cover. So I had to get up every morning about 3:30 or 4 and get the papers and get them ready. And I have to admit, I got to the point where I was making more money, and Daddy was helping me some, and we were making more money with the paper route than he was getting being a preacher. And all those funds went to help my sister and help my mom and dad pay the bills and help her get an education at Furman. And I sort of resented that at that time after a while. You know, here I'm working hard and trying to make all these ends meet. But all those things I look back on, and I think everybody ought to have to deliver papers once in their life, because it really is a challenge.
I agree. I had paper route when I was in high school, too. It really brings back a lot of memories hearing you tell about that. What about college, then? You said you got a scholarship?
Yes, I did. I got a college basketball scholarship. I went to Mars Hill College, which is up in above Asheville, North Carolina, and felt like that would be a good place for me to go to school, and I wanted to be I was a physical education major, because I thought that maybe I'd be a teacher and a coach, and that would be a good area to pursue, and that's the route I took at Mars Hill.
But you do have your doctorate, so you must have gone on to other institutions, or did you get it from Mars Hill?
Oh, no. I went to the University of Alabama, got my master's there. It was more in special ed and dealing with emotional disturbance was my focus there, just emotional disturbances. And looking back now that I'm university president, that's probably the best degree I ever got, because you deal dealing with a lot of people. And right in there, I guess more than anything else, after a while there, I realized, you know, I like University of Alabama. I like higher education. And that's when I decided that maybe I ought to try to get my doctorate in that area and work at that level. And I thought I'd enjoy that more than the K-12.
Well, you must have been there when Bear Bryant was there, right?
Oh, yes. I have some wonderful memories of Bear Bryant. And as far as I'm concerned, he was the best football coach to ever live. I know there's some folks out there who might want to dispute that, and that's okay. But he did some tremendous things and touched a lot of lives. There was a quarterback that played for the University of Alabama named Gary Rutledge, and there was and his brother named Jeff that followed after him. But Gary was in my Sunday school class at the First Baptist Church in Tuscaloosa. Gary said, you know, you ought to come on out and watch practice, and you could be my guest. And so I came up there to the entrance right at to come on the field, and they said, you know, they scrutinized me pretty good and saw my name was there, and I was guest of Gary Rutledge. So I went out there, and I was looking around, and all these players were practicing and all, and I saw Gary finally over there passing. He was a starting quarterback that year for the University of Alabama. And so I went ahead and was over there standing and watching Gary Rutledge, and all of a sudden somebody came up behind me and a little rougher voice said, hey, what's your name? And I just sort of turned around to and said, Jimmy, you know, and I looked there, and then I did a double take, and it was Bear Bryant. And he said, well, what are you doing here? You know, and I said, oh, my, I must be in trouble. He seemed pretty rough. And I said, well, Gary Rutledge invited me. I'm in his Sunday school class, and I'm also the coach over here. And he said, oh, you're Jimmy Epting, and you're the coach over here at the high school. And I said, yes, sir. And so we said, well, you just be careful. Don't get in the way here. And he went on. But I never forget, maybe a year or so later, I was walking up the steps of the Coliseum there at the University of Alabama, and out the front door came C.M. Newton, the head basketball coach, and then Bear Bryant, obviously the head football coach, and they were walking out together coming down the steps. And now C.M., I knew him well, and maybe he might have mentioned my name, but I don't think he did. They both saw me coming up, and we were passing each other, and I just said, hey, guys, something like that, And Bear Bryant was the first one to speak, and he said, well, hello, Jimmy, how are you today? And I looked at that, and I said, wow, he remembered my name. He knew who I was. And that was a defining moment in my life, because I realized that it was important to me that he knew me. And I realized, like at North Greenville, and as I'm about, it's important for people to realize that you know them. Now I'm really nobody when it comes to a lot of folks out there, but the students on campus, I try to get to know their names. I try to make them feel comfortable, and a secret to Bear Bryant, I was told later, is that he did remember names, and he did treat people better than he treated himself, and he tried to reach out. Now he was tough. He was a disciplinarian, and he expected a lot, but he also cared a lot. And it became very obvious to me that if I was going to be in a leadership role, that there were some things I could learn from what Bear Bryant was doing.
Well, the reputation you have around here is that you've learned those lessons well, that you do know people and care about people, and that you give everybody a hug. That's one thing everybody says about you. And now let's take another little break, let our sponsors talk to us for a minute. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about your family and then how you came to become president of North Greenville University.
Great.
Hello, I'm Chris Doyle, president of American Leprosy Missions. We are proud to sponsor this exciting new radio program, Defining Moments. Leprosy is not a disease that gets much attention anymore. But did you know that every 2 minutes of every day somewhere in the world, a person is diagnosed with a new case of leprosy? That is almost 1,000 new cases every day. Many of these cases are precious children. Children like Anna that I met in a hospital in the Philippines. She had been dropped off at the hospital by her parents, and because they were so afraid of leprosy, they never came back to see her. As a parent of 4 kids, stories like that just break my heart. The good news is that you can make a defining moment in the life of a child like Anna by joining us in delivering the cure for leprosy to children and adults around the world. For over 100 years, ALM has been doing just that, bringing healing and hope in the name of Jesus to those affected by leprosy. Call us today at 1-800-LEPROSY or visit our website at leprosy.org. Thanks for listening and for caring.
You're listening to Defining Moments on Christian Talk 660, serving upstate South Carolina from Greenville, Spartanburg, and Anderson.
Although people in the West do not often encounter leprosy, it is still a common disease in Asia. Let me tell you a moving story. Garud touches people with leprosy every day in West Bengal, India. He isn't afraid. He used to be one of them. Carefully dressing a leprosy patient's wounds, Garud remembers back to a time when he suffered greatly and needed someone to help. He found out that he had the disease when he was just 9 years old. Garud's family lived in poverty, and he had no means to pay for treatment. With his condition quickly deteriorating, Garud met a local church pastor who told him about the power and salvation of Jesus. But he only sneered at the pastor. His family fervently worshiped the traditional gods of their village, and he didn't believe Jesus could make a difference in his life. Several years passed, and Garud was on his deathbed. The leprosy had become so bad it was about to take his life. And it was when he was at his weakest that Garud remembered the words of the pastor who told him how Jesus had healed many people with leprosy. "Jesus can heal my sickness," Garud repeated to himself, and a new faith developed in his heart. He had a defining moment. With tears in his eyes, he prayed and asked the Lord for forgiveness. Miraculously, the Lord completely healed Garud of his leprosy in only 2 weeks. Garud dedicated his life to serving Jesus, and soon he entered Bible college to prepare for future ministry. After graduation, Garud began serving as a native missionary, reaching out to those with whom he could most relate, the leprosy patients. Today, he goes around his village helping those with leprosy by cleaning and dressing their wounds. Their eyes light up as he cares for them and touches their disease-stricken bodies. Deeply moved by his acts of kindness, they desire to know the source of his incredible love, and he shares with him his amazing testimony. Many of the leprosy patients have received Jesus as their Savior, and as a result, Garud now leads a Christian fellowship, and more than 80 children are attending Sunday school classes he started in the leprosy colony. You can be a defining moment in the life of someone with leprosy. Call ALM today at 1-800-LEPROSY or go to our website at leprosy.org. Thanks for caring.
Welcome back to Defining Moments. We're talking with Dr. Jimmy Epting, president of North Greenville University. And we have gotten him up through his college days. But something happened apparently in college that I think he'd like to tell us about, and that's how you met your wife.
Oh, indeed. What a special time. I have to first start when I first came to college. I was an athlete and was recognized for a lot of different things, and so I thought I was somebody, a big man on campus. And every year when the freshmen would arrive, I was always the upperclassman, would check them out and say, "My, look at, let's see who would be a special person for me to have a chance to have some time to get to know and so forth." And my junior year, here I am checking out all these new females on campus. And so early on in the semester, this beautiful gal by the name of Gretchen, who is my wife today, she come bopping by, you know, and I'm checking her out, and I said, "Nah, she's a pretty girl. I got to get to know her." So I walked up to her, you know, and used that real cool voice, you know, "Hey, babe, how you doing?" You know, and I tried to really, really set a stage here, and I said, "I know you want to go out with me, and I was wondering if we might could go out Saturday." And
Mr. Smooth,
yeah, right? You know, and she looked at me and she said, "Well, number one, let me first tell you that I don't even know who you are." She didn't know me. How can that be? I'm a big man on campus. Everybody knows me. She says, "I don't even know who you are." And I said, "Wow." And then she said, "And second, if you want to go out with me, you're going to call me in advance, and you're going to ask me out properly." And I said, "God, nobody does that anymore." Even then, you didn't have to go that much trouble to invite somebody out. So I said, "Gee, what am I going to do here?" So I figured if it's going to have any kind of chance for a relationship, then I was going to have to work at this a little bit. So I made sure I was in the dining hall when she was in there. You know, "Hey, darling, how are you? It's good to see you." I did call her up in advance, asked her out. I tried to position myself to be in the right locations all over campus when she'd be going here and there. And then we started dating some. She finally went out with me some. I made those phone calls. And I always like to say, you know, when you're building a relationship, you got to spend time at it. You've got to work at it. You've got to, just like with my Gretchen at that time, I had to work at it. I spent time, and then we fell in love because I really wanted it to be something special. And the same kind of thing's got to happen if you're going to have Jesus Christ in your life. If you really love something, you want to spend time with it. I don't understand some people who tell me, "Well, I'm a Christian, but I don't go to church, or I don't want to be with all those other Christians. They're hypocrites, or I don't read my Bible much, or I don't have devotion." I don't understand that. If you really love Jesus Christ, then you'll want to have a tremendous relationship with him. And the only way you can do that is to spend time on your knees and spend time in his book and have time with other Christians. And so the relationship with my wife. I had to spend time with her. It grew. It wasn't love at first sight, at least for her it wasn't. Almost for me it might have been, but I had to work at it. And so relationships are important in our lives, but if you're wondering, you know, what's wrong with the relationships that I have with others, you get back to treating them better and you want yourself treated. You want to reach out to them. You want to love them, care for them. And so in my wife's case, Gretchen, she did decide that I was okay, and she spent time with me, and I worked at it, and we did get married on the 18th, August 18th of 2008. We'll have been married 35 years. We have three beautiful children that are all married now. Daphne, my daughter, she's the oldest, and I can't hardly believe that sorry, good-for-nothing Nate that married my daughter and took her off away from me like he did could be the father of the greatest kids in the world, but he is. Nathan's three, and Mallory's one. And Bert's my second child, and he and Hannah have one little boy, my third grandchild. James Bertie Epton, the third, and then I my last. Child is Paul, and he married Caroline, and they just been married about 3 months. But I've been away a lot, so I give my wife Gretchen credit for raising those youngins and for them being as well, doing as well as they are, is because of my wife.
You know, we have at Scribbler's Den an amazing device called the Flux Capacitor, and we bought it from the producers of the movie Back to the Future. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
It allows time travel in both directions. Don't ask me how. And from the producers of Star Trek, we acquired that little ear canal language translator. So you're allowed to have two visitors from the past or the future, if you know anybody there, to stay from mid-morning through dinner. They can come together or separately. There's just one blackout period, AD 0 to 100. We know everybody would want to visit with the New Testament people, but we want to know about your unique interests. So who would be your first visitor from the past?
There's no question I would like to visit with Moses.
Moses, all right.
I've always been intrigued with him. You know, he's very fortunate to even be in this world, or in the world at that time. And he had a way about him that caused him to even get in a little bit of trouble. He had temper at times that I think when he ended up killing someone. But then still, God chose him to be the leader. I've always been interested, fascinated with how he led the people. And his goal was the promised land, you know. And even along the way there, he realized that he wouldn't be able to reach that goal. But he never gave up. He persevered for his Lord. And I would love to talk to him about that leadership role he had and following God and what that was like. I mean, God spoke to him, you know.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I've never been privileged enough to hear God's voice and talk to Him like you and I are talking. And
not out loud.
No, I felt His Spirit and know He was around and all, and see it in all that He's created. But how He must have felt when God gave Him the Ten Commandments and when that Red Sea parted and the pressure that was on him when the Pharaoh was coming down on him and how he handled pressure, how he did dealt with the people who lost focus and who stopped believing at points and how he just kept bouncing back through and through, and how he allowed God to use him. I just basically made myself available and want to be used by God and want to stay focused on Him and I want it to be about God in my life, just like I felt like Moses wanted to be about God.
Mm. What about your next book? Tell us about another book that you'd like to take along to Scribbler's Den.
Along the way, there's been one little old book called Acres of Diamonds by Russell H. Conwell, and I've always liked that book. He was a he was a pastor that ended up, he was trying to have, he had folks, students coming to this church and they wanting to get an education and they couldn't at that time way back when. And he started a university called Temple University now. But what really is neat is he traveled all over for the Lord and his ministry. He talked about treasures that could be right there in your own backyard. And so many times, we look way out and say, man, if we could be over here, no telling how much better we could be. And sometimes the diamond is hidden right there in your own back door, and you can make the best of what you have, and you can make it a diamond. You could really improve upon what you have and quit worrying about what everybody else has. And then the other part that I like is meeting the needs of others. That's important. Mm.
Acres of Diamonds by Russell H. Conwell. All right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, we're going to take another break, and then when we come back, we want to talk a little bit more about North Greenville University.
Hello, I'm Chris Doyle, the president of American Leprosy Missions. Although people in South Carolina do not often encounter leprosy, it is still a common disease in India. Let me tell you a touching story about a young woman with leprosy. Sarah is 20 years old. Her mother runs a small tea shop and earns the equivalent of a dollar a day. Sarah developed leprosy when she was 15. She did not respond well to the leprosy drugs, so she was given special drugs, which are very expensive. On the mother's meager wages, they could not possibly afford the treatment. But thanks to generous donors, she got the drugs she needed. She will take the medicine for 1 year to be completely healed. When asked to complete the statement, "Leprosy has changed my life because," she answered, "I lost my school and I did not do well in my studies because of leprosy. My family would not talk to me and they did not care to visit me." She cries bitterly when she talks about this. The local leprosy hospital takes care of her medically while a local Christian mission agency ministers to her spiritually. Through their outreach, Sarah has given her heart to Jesus and believes that she will be well and continue to live normally. Sarah says, "When I came to this hospital, I had a lot of fear about what's going to happen to me. But when the mission team came to the hospital each week, I learned a lot of songs from them, which gave me comfort. I also got to know Jesus." Sarah is a very intelligent and determined young woman. She loves to embroider and do lace work. She loves to sing, too. She tells the caseworker that she is glad she came to the hospital because she has found the one true God. She had a defining moment. Sarah now has her own ministry. She encourages the other patients to attend the fellowships and has a great burden to share Jesus with her family. Her three prayer requests are complete healing, to get an education, and for her family to be saved. You can be a part of a defining moment in the life of someone with leprosy. Your gift of any amount will help us bring healing and hope to someone in need. Call us right now at 1-800-LEPROSY or visit us at leprosy.org. Call now and say you will help. Thanks for caring.
Welcome back to Defining Moments. We're talking with Dr. Jimmy Epting, president of North Greenville University. Now, you've had a lot of different jobs in higher education, and would you say that you've pretty much done every job in the university to prepare you for presidency?
Oh, absolutely. We go back to my doctoral program, University of Alabama, where I had opportunity to be a graduate assistant and do some teaching there for some of the professors in their classes. Judged in college, I was director of admissions, so I got into recruitment and knowing how to recruit students. Then I came to North Greenville when it was a junior college and did about everything at that level that you could do here. Then I went and got some fundraising experience at Furman, and then they called and wanted me to come back to North Greenville as president. And I said, "Well, I've been there, and y'all are in such tough shape. I don't know if I want to come back." And North Greenville at that time had 329 students. It was $3 million in debt. Couldn't make payroll. Couldn't pay the bills. The South Carolina Baptist Convention, unbeknownst to me at that time, had decided it was time to close it up, and maybe rightfully so, with it in such bad shape. But I'll never forget, to talk about defining moments, I'll never forget May 1st, 1991, my first day on the job. And I told the Board of Trustees what needed to be done, and that was we need to have a strong commitment to quality education in a biblically sound, Christ-centered environment. And in order to do that, the people had to be certainly qualified in their positions, but they also needed to all love Jesus Christ. So some serious decisions would need to be made. So the first day on the job, I did. I felt like we needed to eliminate all the vice presidents. There's about, you know, three or four or five of them, and then we had to combine a lot of positions, which meant a lot of other folks had to leave. We went to church with some of these people. My children went to school with them. Matter of fact, I'll never forget, my boys came home from school and said, "Daddy, I done been in two fights. What's going on? I'm defending you left and right, but you got to give me some relief here." But the reason all this was happening, the difficulties were happening for my family and all, was because I was having to make these tough decisions. And so I guess the first day, that May 1, 1991, I eliminated probably 15, 20 people and many more after that during that course of the year. But at the end of the day, talking about defining moments, at the end of the day, I was in my office on my knees praying and crying and praying and crying, feeling just a pity party. I said, "Lord, this is against my nature. I don't know. What have you gotten me into? I just can't do this. I kept saying, "I can't do this." But I felt his presence and I felt his spirit. And it was saying very clearly, "Jimmy, I know you can't, but I can." And the very next morning, a friend brought in a placard that's on my desk to this day. And it's, "I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me." And I knew from there that it needed to be all about Jesus Christ and didn't need to be about me at all, and that I needed to get out of the way. Now, there's times I haven't done well at that. There's times when I've gotten in the way, and that's probably when we messed up. But we try to seek His face, and we try to stay focused on Him. And that, and the real key, now, if you want to know the difference between North Greenville and all the rest, is a word called passion. And if you're going to make a difference for Jesus Christ, you've got to have passion. And the second word is commitment. And I remember in trying to make a decision to come as president, and what, "God, are you really calling?" Sometimes people say, "How do you know He's calling?" And I said, "Well, you've got to be on your knees. You've got to pray. You've got to search His Word. And then you've got to feel. You've got to talk to people, and you've got to be doers of the Word. And then you will know what God wants." And I never forget the morning. I still couldn't make that decision. I opened up my Bible and I pointed my finger, and it was Luke 10:27, and it says, "Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, with all thy soul, all thy strength, and all thy mind." Now Luke covers all four. He was a doctor. Now, some of the other books, you know, don't cover all four. You're talking about heart, soul, strength, and mind. All of them are there. There doesn't leave anything. And so when I read that scripture verse, man, you're talking about, you know, I accepted Jesus Christ early in my life. But, man, I need to get to another level. I need to, if Jimmy was going to be president of North Greenville and North Greenville was going to be a Christ-centered institution, then Jimmy had to recommit. And so the same kind of thing. It was time for North Greenville to give all to the Lord. And all our athletics and all academics, Jesus needed to be a part of all of it. And it had to be a real passion. And we say, the bottom line is, we want every student out there to come to North Greenville University. But we want to understand we're committed to Jesus Christ here. We want every student to get saved for the first time in their life, or get stronger in their walk while they're here if they're already Christians, and we want them to graduate. And so our first ministry, our verse, is to share Jesus with our students. And so this past year, we had over 350 saved on this campus. And then the second part of this is we're number one in the nation year in and year out when it comes to student summer missionaries. And North Greenville University still sent out more student summer missionaries than all the public and private schools in South Carolina combined. That's why we have record enrollments, people knocking the doors down to be a part of us, why fundraising's been good. That's why we've raised $40 million worth of different gifts have come in. Many, many buildings have been built. Many programs have been added and hadn't borrowed, you know, any money to do it.
You have no debt at all.
We have only about $600,000 of that $3 million left when we came in 91.
Wow, that's amazing.
This is a miracle of God. I mean, God's done all this. Jimmy hadn't. Mm-hmm. When people say, and show you the sense, the humor of our Lord. He said, everybody looks and he says, "Jimmy Epting's president of that and all that's happened." And the Lord just sort of cackles you because they know that, you know, he couldn't do it. It has to be God.
Okay, you have another visitor. Who would be your second visitor from the past?
Let's see. I think I would love to talk to M.C. Donnan and maybe some of the other founders of North Greenville University. And he had to work so hard. It seems like North Greenville had, all through the years, almost about to die. And people like M.C. Donnan would work so hard to keep the doors open.
I don't suppose you met him in life. I think he died in 1962, didn't he?
Yeah, I never got to meet him.
Okay, the last question is, what's going to be in the last chapter of the book that you're going to write up at Scribbler's Den?
The measure of life is not its duration, but its donation, given back to others. So I would also include there that when I get to heaven, I want at least one person to come up and say, Jimmy, you're the one who invited me to heaven. You're the one who invited me here. And those are some things that I would add in my last chapter.
That would be a great one. I'm sure that many people are going to meet you in heaven and thank you for inviting them. And we want to thank you for being with us today, spending all this time. It's been great. Your dedication to the Lord's service and your humility and your witness to His power and His grace have been a real blessing and encouragement to the body of Christ through this program. We appreciate it so much, and we want to thank you again.
Well, thank you for having me, and I would like to say one last little line. Is that just remember, I'll fail you, but Jesus Christ never will.
Next week's guest at Scribbler's Den will be Dr. Frank Page, senior pastor of Taylor's First Baptist Church and immediate past president of the Southern Baptist Convention, America's largest Protestant denomination. So tune to Christian Talk 660 at 2 p.m. next Sunday for his defining moments. Defining Moments is a production of Amici Media in conjunction with Altitude Audio. To suggest a person to be interviewed, email a brief description to subject@definingmomentsradio.com.
Hello, I'm Chris Doyle, president of American Leprosy Missions. We are proud to sponsor this exciting new radio program, Defining Moments. Leprosy is not a disease that gets much attention anymore. But did you know that every 2 minutes of every day somewhere in the world a person is diagnosed with a new case of leprosy? That is almost 1,000 new cases every day. Many of these cases are precious children. Children like Anna that I met in a hospital in the Philippines. She had been dropped off at the hospital by her parents, and because they were so afraid of leprosy, they never came back to see her. As a parent of 4 kids, stories like that just break my heart. The good news is that you can make a defining moment in the life of a child like Anna by joining us in delivering the cure for leprosy to children and adults around the world. For over 100 years, ALM has been doing just that, bringing healing and hope in the name of Jesus to those affected by leprosy. I want to tell you the story of a young man from Angola that suffered from one of the most frightening diseases known to man, leprosy. Carlos came from a poor family in the city of Huambo. After completing high school, he became a school teacher and enjoyed that work for 12 years. Then suddenly he began to feel terrible pain in his legs, and nodules began to appear on his face and ears, making him look terrible. First, he spent a lot of money on traditional treatments and also in the hospitals of the Huambo area. However, the disease continued to worsen. It was then that a friend told him to go to the Kalakembe Hospital, and so he did. When the doctors saw him, they told him the devastating news. He had leprosy. He broke down and cried bitterly. But thankfully, the nurses and doctors cheered him up and told him that he needed to have faith in the great physician, the Lord Jesus Christ, because He cures us on the inside and the outside. Carlos stayed at the hospital for 5 years and was finally discharged as a cured patient. His testimony is that he was cured not only in his body, but in his soul. Even though he was baptized as a child, he was far from God. As he was following the treatment, he started to study the Bible. As a result of the Bible study, God transformed his life. He was baptized in the chapel just outside the hospital in the leprosy village. In his own words, Carlos says, "I am happy because Jesus Christ lives in me and also in my family. And I wish to express thanks to all who have, through love and sacrifice, contributed to our having this opportunity as leprosy patients to find a cure in our bodies and in our souls." Through the generous gifts of people like you, Carlos and many others can experience a defining moment in their lives. But there are many others in the world suffering from leprosy. They need your help. Leprosy strikes a new victim every 2 minutes. Please call us at 1-800-LEPROSY or go to our website at leprosy.org. Give a gift today and be a part of a defining moment in the life of a child with leprosy. Please call today, and thanks for caring.